Buy with Rob is your best choice when purchasing your new home in the Puget Sound area. Call 360-710-9425 today and get started on the best home buying experience you will ever have. Go to buywithrob.com today.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is?
Julie. Julie.
Guess what day it is?
Julie.
Julie. Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is? Anybody? Anybody?
Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is? Anybody? Anybody?
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Woo-hoo!
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
Leslie, guess what today is?
Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Hello?
Podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Allman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
Pope has a bigger agenda. He's got to get on with other things of talking about the environment and protecting migrants and carrying on the work of the church. We're not going to go down a rabbit hole on this.
Man, battle station's missile.
Chief of Watch, sound the general alarm.
From the Buy With Rob studio, located in beautiful Silverdale, Washington, this is the Dave Bowman Show. Now, here is your submarine qualified, well-coffeed, stuffy, elitist history buff host, Dave Bowman.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, sea mines, Seattle stadiums and police, rabbit holes, Chinese ships, politics, and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Well, there was a really loud bang and then a lot of questions. Seattle has a stadium problem that's only going to get bigger and a police problem that they're going to make bigger. And giving the way the church is handling their problem, theirs is going to probably get bigger, too. So here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 565-3283. The email is dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. Of course, we're on the web, probably even the dark web. Ooh. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, or just use your preferred non-denominational web search engine to go to thedavebowmanshow.com. Eloqui conizio. The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. I don't know how your day is going. I thought mine was going pretty crappy, but then I heard from my friend Chris DeShera, who just apparently just ran over his neighbor's dog, which is not funny. But if you know Chris, it kind of is. Ben set the kitchen on fire this morning. Well, tried to anyway. He's proud of himself because he learned to use the microwave. And what he didn't learn was the difference between 20 seconds and 2 minutes. So we're airing out the house this morning because the French fries went up. Why he was cooking French fries at 8 o'clock in the morning, I have no idea, but he was. It's what happened. So that's how my day is going. It is trash day, too, so we've had that celebration. I don't know why, since he was a little boy, Ben has loved trash day, and so we go outside and watch the trash guys come and do their job. It's exciting. It's fun. It's what it is. So I was sitting here last night, and I didn't notice the exact time. Normally, when something like this happens, I immediately look at the clock, so I have some, but I didn't last night. It was probably because of frustration. The Mariner game was on, and look, this has been a typical Seattle Mariners season. There's two typical Seattle Mariners seasons. Number one is they just suck from word go, and they lose 100 games. The second is they play well for just long enough to get you interested and exciting, and then they just sort of fade away. And this is that season. They were, at one point, not that long ago, the fourth winning, the number four team in the entire OD of Major League Baseball. They had the most fourth most wins. They had a lock on a playoff spot, and then July hit, and I don't know what happened. July went like the air went out of a balloon, and so, but I'm still loyal, and I was sitting here watching the game last night because they were playing the Padres, who a friend of mine, Howard Pace, is a big fan of. So I was thinking maybe he'd be in the stands and they'd have a screenshot of him or crowd shot of him, but turns out he was in Monterey. So the point being that the game, I mean, the very first pitch, San Diego has a 1-0 lead, and it's like, yeah, this sucks. And they play, you know, reasonably well, but, you know, if you only score one run, you're probably not going to win in Major League Baseball. Anyway, I was sitting here watching the game, and I've got the windows open, and because it's really nice here now. And there was a very loud boom-bang kind of thing. I mean, it shook the house. It was that loud. It was that big. It shook the whole house. And I looked outside, and I didn't see anything. And I've got a pretty good view out my window there. And I was waiting for the inevitable emergency response, right? The fire trucks or whatever, thinking that, well, if it was something important, it would be response. I also know that the local schools are going through some training right now that involves loud bangs and stuff like that. But I did think it's kind of late. It was basically sunset. I mean, it was just, I didn't note the time, but I know approximately it was during the Mariner game. And so it was in that, you know, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock range. And anyway, the point being that nothing happened. So I just sort of shuffled it back into the back of my mind and went, okay, no big deal. Obviously, whatever happened was supposed to happen. And and I felt stupid later on because I knew exactly what it was. I knew what I'd been following the story all day long. Well, since it broke in the early afternoon. And if you're, you know, friends on Facebook, you were following along with me. So a sea mine. Yeah. You know, like the kind that floated up into Gilligan's Island Lagoon, you know, the big round thing with the pointy stuff on it. A sea mine was found floating off Brownsville over here, which, kind of caught people off guard because, number one, when you see this mine, I swear to God, when you see the pictures of this thing, you're like, that is straight out of World War One or World War Two. I mean, it's round, it's scaly, it's rusted, it has the pointy thing sticking out on top of it, and it's just floating there in the water. And there it is, right off of Brownsville, which is, you know, just 2 miles from here, so it was kind of like, well, yeah, what the hell? Why is there a sea mine floating in our waters here? Now, originally, the original report had it off Port Orchard, which is much further to the south, and indeed, literally right across the inlet from Puget Sound Naval Shipyard. So when I first saw the first stories, it was like, that's bizarre, because Puget Sound Naval Shipyard is the biggest naval shipyard probably in the world. It is a security, it's like Fort Knox. I mean, you're just not getting in there from the water side or from the land side. So how in the world does a naval sea mine end up floating around there without anybody noticing or reacting? So I was kind of suspicious of that first. And then almost immediately the story broke back that, no, it's up by Brownsville, not Port Orchard. Okay, well, that's a significant difference. That's about 10 miles worth of difference. And some seriously different flow patterns to get back up to where it was near the Agate Passage between Bainbridge Island and the Kitsap Peninsula. Okay, this makes a little more sense in the broader scheme of things. This makes a little more whatever. And so we're watching the live coverage of it as the Coast Guard's going out and they put two guys in the water. They got two guys swimming up to this mine, this sea mine. And I'm thinking to myself, it's kind of a crossed, I don't know, scenario here, because these are the kind of people that like to be next to stuff that blows up. And at the same time, there's that element of, oh, there's a sea mine. Who do I not like that I can assign to go get this thing? sort of approach to it. And it's just bobbing around out there in the water off Brownsville. And so the Coast Guard comes in. The Coast Guard looks at it and says, not our problem. And the Navy ends up coming in, the EOD people. Now, the thing you need to know about Brownsville is it's right next to Keyport, which is a naval weapons station of some history. Keyport is the torpedo station, or was when I was in, and who knows what it does now. I think it still does torpedoes, but this is the torpedo testing and you know, undersea warfare museum, which is a fantastic museum, is located at Keyport. They do a lot of testing of undersea weapons and that sort of things, which a sea mine would classify as. So I just sort of assumed that it was at Keyport and decided to go on vacation. I don't know. Floated down towards Brownsville. It raises a lot of questions. Number one, why would they have a mine in the water that they didn't seem to know about or were, you know, paying attention to or whatever? At any rate, the thing goes out. So you got these pictures of these two guys in the water with it. And they're just, you know, poking around at this thing and pushing on it. And they attach a rope to it at one point, and they start pulling it further out into the channel so that it's not as close to shore as it was. And there's a rubber dinghy out there with another guy in it that's wearing all kinds of flak jackets and helmets and the whole nine yards. Like, that's going to help. And they're diddling around with this thing for a good 4, 5, 6 hours. Enough that we had a long conversation on Facebook about the fact that this mine was floating out there. And was it from Gilligan's Island? Was it from here? Was it from Indian River or Indian Island? I'm sorry. Was it from, you know, wherever? And it was obvious to me that it was from Keyport. But, you know, at this point, nobody's really asking those questions. They're kind of asking the questions of why is there a mine? And what are we going to do about the mine floating around in the middle of the passage here off Brownsville, which is a fairly busy marina? I mean, there's a lot of civilian traffic in and out of this area. Plus, you've got the Agate Passage there, which is the only bridge going to Bainbridge Island on it. If this thing were to hit that bridge and blow up the bridge, then, you know, the rich people out on Bainbridge Island wouldn't have their maids for a few days till they could get it repaired. Anyway, eventually the thing, they decide to blow it up because that's what you do. And so they smack some explosives on the side of this thing, backed off and detonated the explosives. And that's what I heard. And it was a really good bang. I mean, it really went boom, boom. The whole house kind of shook for a second. And again, I'm 2 miles from Brownsville and Keyport, and it's kind of like a big triangle. If you went out from our house, I mean, it really is. And so really good acoustics here. As I've said on numerous occasions, I can hear colors from both bases, Keyport and Bangor, which are opposite directions, 2 miles in opposite directions. But we get a lot of really good audio here from stuff that's happening. When they're shooting out on the ranges, we get that. All kinds of sound quality here that I really like. I didn't think anything of it because the Mariners were sucking so bad at that point. It was 2-0 by then, and it was like, you know, Gene Segura leads off with a triple, and then we get a strikeout, a walk, and a double play. I mean, that's the way the night was going. I mean, it was sad. And then that thing goes off, and I completely forgot about what was going on and didn't get excited about it at that point. So it turns out that the sea mine was inert. In other words, it was not an armed explosive. It was because normally what would have happened is they should have set off the explosion, boom, and then they should have got a secondary explosion, kaboom, when the external device set off the mine. Well, that didn't happen. They just got the first explosion, boom, and it shattered up the pieces of the mine, and off it went. So it was probably an inert training device, probably used. We had a lot of this kind of training, a lot of this kind of warfare going on, particularly in the Persian Gulf, when the Iranians mined the Persian Gulf a few years ago, if you recall, and we had to use minesweepers to go in there. And so they had to train somewhere, and Keyport's the perfect place for it. And so it was probably one of those. But nobody has any idea how this sea mine got out. Nobody has any clue whatsoever how this sea mine just decided to go a-wandering. Where it came, why was it in the water to begin with? I mean, normally when they're done training, they take these things out of the water and store them properly. They don't just leave them in the water. And so now there's all kinds of questions. How long has this thing been there? What if this thing was from all the way back, you know, during the first Gulf War when we were actually training? Well, what was it, 1987, even before that, when we were doing the minesweeping training, the minesweeping operations in the Persian Gulf? And what if this thing has been sitting out there in that water off Keyport, off Brownsville since then? It doesn't make any sense. You'd think a fisherman would have caught it by now. And maybe that's what happened. Maybe some fisher guy caught a hold of this thing and yanked it, and it had been in the water so long it broke the chain or whatever, and it just started drifting, and who knows? But it sure caused a lot of consternation around here and a ginormous banging last night. It was kind of cool. I wish I'd have been thinking about it. Had I been not commiserating about how bad the Mariners were doing, I could have gone down there and watched it. I mean, it's not that far away. Of course, they would have said, "For your safety, sir, please stay back 1,500 yards." Okay, I got a telescope. I could have gone up on the hill and watched down there and seen it. But alas, the Mariners were sucking so bad that it was just bad. It's the kind of cool thing that happens when you live around a military base. You get a sea mine that goes, and of course the puns start with that. And anyway, we had a good conversation about the sea mine. Speaking of the Mariners, however, Mariners play in a stadium which is currently known as Safeco Stadium. Safeco Stadium is owned by the city of Seattle. I don't know if you knew that or not. Safeco Stadium was built for the express purpose of keeping the Mariners in Seattle. There was a time when the Mariners were not good. They're still not great, but they weren't good, and they were struggling, and there was no interest in them, and they couldn't afford it. And there were other cities that wanted a Major League Baseball team. And so there were teams courting the Mariners to move down to wherever. And 1995, Seattle had a miracle here. I'm not going to recount the whole thing, but, you know, Edgar Martinez's double, Ken Griffey scores from the first, we beat the Yankees. And this spurs the building of the stadium at public expense, for which the Mariners will then lease, because it's now a state-of-the-art stadium and they can compete financially then with the other teams. And this is the way that happens all across the country. And it happens even at lower level sports as well. I mean, we saw this in Stockton a few years ago when the city of Stockton spent a ton of money on the arena, the ice arena, and what would eventually become Banner Island Ballpark. Now, Banner Island Ballpark, the Stockton Ballpark, is an amazing facility, particularly when you're talking about minor league baseball. When you compare it to old Billy Eber Field over there in the park, it's like a cathedral. It's a beautiful ballpark, but at the same time, it was built at public expense and is leased by the team. So the taxpayers fork over the money for this. The team then leases the facility at a fairly reasonable rate, along with tax incentives and tax breaks and that sort of thing. And this is what happened in Seattle. They built this monumental ballpark. I've never been there. When I left, the Mariners were playing in the Kingdome. I've not been to Safeco Field. I haven't gone this year, just really because I can't bring myself to spend $60 for a ticket. I just, there's something in my brain that says that's too much to pay to go to a Major League Baseball game. I don't want to take my son to a game that cost me $60 again, now $120 to get into, because my son doesn't like to sit and watch baseball like I do. He likes to go, you know, see the kids' areas and jump in the bounce house, which costs you another $20. And I don't want to do that. So I haven't brought myself yet to go to a game at Safeco. I will, but I haven't done it yet. The stadium is amazing. It's beautiful. It's a retractable roof. We live in, you know, the Pacific Northwest, and so if there's a hint of rain, they close the roof. If it's not, then they open it. If it's beautiful, they open it. If it's smoky, they close it. It's fantastic, but it's owned by the city of Seattle, and that's the important thing to understand here. The city of Seattle owns this stadium, and the Mariners' lease is about to expire. they want the Mariners, and the Mariners want to sign a 25-year lease extension so that the Mariners will stay in Seattle and what is Safeco, what is now called Safeco Field, its name is going to change, for another 25 years. But there's a snag. The stadium needs some maintenance. It needs some minor repair work, and it needs some maintenance done, particularly to the roof, which moves, and that maintenance needs to be done. And if you don't do that maintenance, then you're going to have a situation like you had in Montreal a few years ago where the roof closed and never opened again. Whoops. And what happens if it opens and never closes again? Really? Whoops. Kind of approach. So there's $180 million that needs to be spent to repair the stadium. Mariners have made it clear that this is your responsibility, Seattle. You own the stadium. We're just the tenant. Just like if you rented a house or leased an apartment or whatever, you would expect major repairs to be made by the landlord. Well, that's kind of with the position of the Mariners here in this beautiful stadium that was built for them at taxpayers' expense. Now, the point I keep trying to make here is that Seattle owns this stadium. You need to understand that. Seattle owns this stadium. The Mariners do not own it. So a couple of weeks ago, City Council of Seattle sits down to approve the $180 million worth of expenditures. And of course, the socialist movement in Seattle goes absolutely bat bleep crazy over this. They want that $180 million spent for homeless issues because they didn't get the head tax from Amazon. They didn't manage to hold up Amazon. So they lost in their minds. You know, $100 million a year in this head tax that they don't have. Now they need money. They need money to provide these homeless services, whatever they are, whatever they might be. Hi, Patrick. How are you? They think that this $180 million is going to make a difference somehow or another. And it's important to keep in mind that the city of Seattle owns the stadium. I got to keep coming back to that. You could pour this $180 million into quote-unquote homeless services, whatever the hell that means, and it's not going to make a dent in any way because the mismanagement of homeless services is universal, and the solution is not more money. The solution is not let's stick up Amazon and Jeff Bezos for $100 million a year. No, it's not going to change anything. It can't. But these people are convinced that it is. And so they managed to protest. They brought the City Council of Seattle to a complete halt over this $180 million for repairs to the stadium that the city of Seattle owns. And they've made it clear that they're not going to budge. And so now the city of Seattle is kind of vacillating on what they're going to do. And the Seattle Mariners have said to the city of Seattle, well, we're not going to sign a long-term lease unless you maintain the facility, which you own, which we lease from you, and we expect to be maintained properly. Now, remember here, the people that want the $180 million for quote-unquote homeless services, part of that money, a significant part of that money, they want to form a corporation that then owns properties that they then lease to tenants, right? And they don't seem to grasp the concept that if you do that, you have to maintain the facilities. You can't just say, well, it's somebody else's responsibility. So they're already missing lesson one here. But lesson number two they're missing is you have a lot of homeless people in Seattle who produce absolutely nothing and cost a great deal. And you have a Major League Baseball team that produces quite a bit of revenue for you and will continue to do so in the future, presumably because they're going to get better. I mean, the odds are that sooner or later, they're going to actually be good. They're okay now. They're kind of meh, but the odds on favorite is sooner or later, they'll be good and you'll have a great year. And believe me, I've seen what a World Series championship can do for a team. I was in Atlanta in the 90s and I watched a team that, you know, used to have days where they would draw 900 people to Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, go to selling out game after game after game after game after game. And I saw the economic activity that takes place around that, which was far more economic activity than you get from, Joe homeless guy sitting on the corner with a sign saying, give me money, give me money, give me money. Sorry, it's just a fact. Homeless people don't produce anything. They don't produce any tax base. They are a negative tax liability. That doesn't mean I don't care. It doesn't mean we shouldn't do something about it. What we need to understand is in the broader scheme of economics, they're not really helping things. They are a net drag. Whereas a baseball team, a Major League Baseball team, is a net positive. And so this $180 million hanging in the balance, I finally saw this morning where someone said to the city council of Seattle, you realize that if the Mariners leave, you still own the stadium. You understand that, right? You still own the stadium. You're still going to have to spend the $180 million because now it'll probably be more than that by then. Because now, in order to attract another tenant into the stadium to lease it from you so that you're getting something from it, so you're not losing money on the whole deal, which you probably are anyway, because of the tax incentives and everything else you'll give, you're going to have to spend that money. So why are you doing that? Why are you not explaining economics to socialists? Well, because socialists don't care about economics. That's part of the problem. Socialists believe that it's all about emotions and feelings and caring about stuff. But what's the city of Seattle going to do when they have this stadium on their books and they have no tenant paying anything to be in it anymore? Oh, Dave, they'll have concerts now and then. Really? You think concerts are going to keep going to a stadium that isn't maintained? You think concerts are going to continue to go to stadiums where the roof doesn't work anymore? You really think that's going to happen? It's not going to happen. It can't happen. And so this argument going on about this $180 million misses the point. Now, and don't get me wrong. I think that major league sports, football, baseball, basketball, hockey in particular, have made a killing on cities by convincing them that if you don't build us a new stadium, we're going to leave. Leave. Who cares? These sports teams have no loyalty to their communities anymore. I mean, there's a few that do, but most of them, they don't. I mean, look at the Rams, for example. The Rams, this whole St. Louis odyssey where St. Louis built them this palace that they haven't even paid off yet, that they haven't even managed to pay off the bonds for that. They gave the Rams all kinds of breaks, all kinds of tax incentives, all kinds of everything. And then the Rams turn around and move back to L.A. because L.A. is going to build them a bigger city. And L.A. is just as stupid as they are. Do you think the Rams aren't going to be afraid to leave? The Chargers aren't going to be afraid to leave if they don't get what they want downstream? And in this case, the city of Seattle is toying with the idea of losing the Mariners and still being stuck with a stadium that they're going to have to maintain. And I'm just waiting. I know this is going to happen. It's inevitable. The proposal will be made that if the Mariners leave, we'll just turn the stadium into a big homeless shelter. So now you're going to have this big stadium that you still have to maintain that's going to generate no revenue whatsoever. But you wait. That's the discussion that's coming. I know this place. I know how socialists think. That's what's going to happen. Tap fast. We got to take a break. It's the Dave Bowman Show right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Stay with us, back right after this. Thanks, Patrick. I'm glad my liver's okay, too.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You are listening to the Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back. Tis I, Dave. Text machine is open. Area code 209-565-DAVE. It's 565-3283. Email remains Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Facebook, Twitter, thedavebowmanshow.com. There is no reason for you not to have your say on this show. Make it easy to do. We got the chat room going on Facebook Live. We are not live on the Podcast 99 Net Radio side today. We have a technical problem over there, and I'm not sure what the deal is going dealio is with that. So have to. We will air later on as a possibly live podcast, but for some reason right now I can't go live, and I'm not sure what that is. I've got to work on that. Speaking of problems that need to be worked on, see this interview with the Cardinal out of Chicago? Okay, look, I had a lot to say yesterday about, you know, the Catholic Church, and not as much about the Catholic Church as about the issues with childhood sexual abuse and beyond that. The Catholic Church has to handle its problems. They've got to. But it's almost like they're going out of their way to not handle it properly. And I have no idea why. I get the idea of circling the wagons. I understand how organizations like that work. I understand how churches work with regards to that. But man, this is odd. So, and again, I haven't followed the minutia of the story. I was trying to yesterday. I was chatting with a friend of mine who is Roman Catholic, and he was throwing all these people at me and what they do and how they do it. And it was confusing as all get out because it's like anything else. They use their own terminology and they use their own internal structure, and they assume that everybody else understands that. And you don't. I don't. I'm not Roman Catholic. It's just like, you know, my wife goes through the same thing. She works at a naval hospital. She's not Navy. She's a civilian. And so this is the first time she's worked at a naval hospital. And so here it is a year after she started there. And she still comes home and says, what does this mean? And so I have to explain it to her. And she still, because she doesn't understand the culture. She doesn't understand the language. She doesn't understand those things. And so it's kind of the same way, I think, with churches, in particular the Catholic Church. And it's a very good friend I was talking to who was Roman Catholic. And he was trying to explain to me why, you know, it's not that this is just bad. It's not that these priests were abusing these kids and raping kids and molesting kids and doing things. It wasn't just that there was a cover up of it. It's that the cover up literally goes all the way to the top. The Pope may, nobody knows for sure, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence here. The Pope may very well have been part of the process of covering this up. And if he is, well, what do you do? I mean, you're kind of caught in a catch-22 here with the whole thing, because the Pope is, you know, Christ's vicar up on earth, right? Apostolic succession. He's the guy that apparently the Holy Spirit leaned upon the Cardinal of College and said, shh, vote for this guy, vote for this guy. Or however it is that the Holy Spirit does that. And so they all dutifully, because that's what happens when the Holy Spirit speaks, chose this guy and put him on the throne of Peter. That's what they call it. And made him the Pope. And so there's a theological device here that he's supposed to be infallible. He's not, and I think we all understand that, but that his service as Pope is supposed to not be questioned because he is the chosen of the deity. Well, it's kind of turning out that maybe this chosen of the deity wasn't such a nice guy. Wasn't such a good guy, was more concerned for a guy that talks about, you know, he's a socialist. I mean, politically, I don't think there's much doubt of that. But for a guy who talks so much about helping the downtrodden and serving, you know, and washing feet and that sort of thing, it's turning out that he may very well have been the chief of the cover up in covering up the fact that priests were abusing children. And of course, this is causing all kinds of problems. You got Catholics who are calling for him to step down, which, of course, that kind of creates some backlash because he's a very popular pope in parts of the world. See, that's the part we don't always grasp here, is that he's not just in charge of the church here in America. He's in charge of the church everywhere around the globe. And there are parts of the globe where this pope is particularly beloved, particularly South America, which has a much higher percentage of Catholics than, say, the United States does. And so their attitude is, why are we listening to the United States? They're not in charge. And yet, Much of the funding for the Catholic Church comes from the United States, from the parishioners in the United States. It's a mess. It really is. And then you get this cardinal out in Chicago who was asked about, you know, what should the Pope do, and had this to say.
The Pope has a bigger agenda. He's got to get on with other things of talking about the environment and protecting migrants and carrying on the work of the church. We're not going to go down a rabbit hole on this.
We're not going to go down a rabbit hole on this, abuse scandal is what he was specifically referring to. We're not going to go down a rabbit hole on this. Well, dude, this is not a rabbit hole. This is a criminal enterprise. The church, there's no way the church can say they didn't know about this, because it's been shown over and again that they did. There's no way the church can say we took action, because over and over again, and that's part of the problem, it's being shown that they didn't take action. What they did was they covered it up. They, you know, moved people out of the way. They bought off people. They did whatever they could to essentially cover it up. So there's no way they can say they didn't know. There's no way they can say it's not a rabbit hole. It's going to literally, if it hasn't already, irreparably damage the church, particularly here in the United States. And, you know, the question to me, the question in my mind is, okay, if this is happening here in the United States, what's happening in other parts of the world? Are they seeing this kind of behavior in Catholic priests in other countries, in other cultures, where perhaps things aren't as modern as they are here? We don't hear the stories of that. We don't hear the reports about this happening in other parts of the country, but it wasn't that long ago. Maybe it was that long ago. It's been nigh on to, when was that Congress, that youth Congress, that Catholic youth Congress? I'm thinking John Paul II was still the Pope then, right? And the kids from Cuba, the Catholic kids from Cuba, and by the way, Cuba does have churches, came to the United States and defected. There were jokes then about, you know, how bad Castro was, that the Catholic kids would rather be with Catholic priests in the United States than be with Castro. This has been going on for a long time. This is nothing new. But this reaction to it and this elevation of a cardinal to the pontiff that may have directly been involved with the cover-ups is new. I mean, this is what do you do kind of stuff. And this is the kind of thing that these guys look at and they go, what's the solution? We already had one pope step down, and now we're starting to learn why Pope, whatever his name was, Benedict. I know him better by his real name, Ratzenberger. And of course, when he was elevated to the pope, there was a lot of controversy about him because he had a background, active or otherwise, he had a background in the Hitler Youth back in the day. He becomes pope, and it's like they make him pope, but then nobody likes him. Nobody wants to listen to him. Nobody in the card. I mean, and now we're finding out that the reason is that he was not, for whatever reason, probably part of this cover-up, and in fact was actively trying to do something about it, and was getting a lot of resistance from the internal workings of the papacy, the internal workings of the Vatican, which ultimately they led him to resign, to step down, to say, I don't want to be pope anymore because I can't do anything. At the time, I think we were given the excuse of, you know, health or whatever, and it's not a Catholic priest isn't going to be able to say, well, I want to spend more time with my family, because that doesn't really work. But you know, it was the typical excuse, non-excuse type stuff. And so he stepped down. They elect this new guy, and of course, he's from South America. The day he was elected, I had the pastor from the father from the Catholic Church next door to the radio station on to talk about this, and how they were really excited about this guy because he was South American. He was dedicated to the poor and uplifting the broken and you know, really, really doing the work of Jesus. And now it turns out that he may have been more interested in doing the cover-up. And it's got to be frustrating for Catholics. It's got to be. It's got it, particularly in parts of the world like the United States, where this sort of behavior is not acceptable. And I know the arguments. The arguments are made all the time to me. Well, Dave, back in ancient Greece, it was normal for a man to take a young boy and groom him as part of his training for man. I get all that, but this ain't ancient Greece, dude. This is not ancient Greece. And if you think you're going to groom my son into manhood, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you is what's going to happen. But for some reason, here in the United States, particularly, this seems to become prevalent. Again, I think it's universal. It's not just the Catholic Church here in the United States. It's all of them. And my experience tells me that it is all of them. It's every organizational religious organization there is has to some degree this problem. There's a reason for that, which is that pedophiles seek out places that are like this because they can use them. There is a certain level of trust, I guess, that automatically goes with things. It's a place where kids can be groomed, can be parents trust, perhaps unwisely. You know, I didn't intend to go this direction, but one of the things I always had a problem with in the Christian church when I was there was kids' church, children's church. You ever go to that? So you have the Sunday morning service, and the first thing you do, you sing maybe one song or whatever if you're Protestant, and then somebody gets up in the back and says, and then the pastor, who's ever leading the services, and all the little kids below the age of whatever go with this person, and they're going to go off into a separate service so that they don't disturb us. And I hated that. I did everything I could as a pastor to get rid of that because it seemed counterintuitive to me. It seemed wrong. If you're going to train up a child in the way they should go, don't you want them next to you to do that? Do you really want... what is it? Is there some magical switch at 12 where all of a sudden they know how to behave in a service that they haven't been in? Of course not. And if you're good enough as a pastor and a preacher to communicate, you can communicate with kids just as well as you can communicate with adults if you're good at it, if you track practice at it. Anyway, I try to get rid of it. One of the things I appreciate about Judaism is we don't do that. Kids stay with you in the synagogue. And I have talked to rabbi after rabbi, some of them in tears over joy with kids, having kids in the services. I specifically remember my own rabbi, Art. At one point we had a young girl, you know, she was old enough to walk and a little bit of talking, and, you know, she was being a little girl in the service, and you could tell it was kind of putting him off on his game a little bit, but he wasn't going to object to it because we don't. And at one point, the little girl got in the aisleway and walked up towards him, and he picked her up, put her on his shoulder, and proceeded to deliver his entire discussion with this little girl on his shoulder, smiling and laughing. It was great. But pedophiles know that most churches don't do that. It's an easy opportunity. It's a way to do that. Churches are extraordinarily vulnerable. And if you happen to be one of these people, then why wouldn't you try to work your way into something like that? Why wouldn't you try to work your way into being a priest, a pastor, a Sunday school teacher, somewhere along those lines? And so the idea that the church then turns around and covers that up is problematic. I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. I wish I could sit here and tell you that the Pope's going to have a heart attack, or, you know, that the Pope's going to resign or whatever. You know, that's what Warren Harding did when controversy and scandal got to his office. He just died, and that's how he dealt with it. I don't know what this Pope's going to do. I do know that saying we're not going to go down this rabbit hole, that doesn't help. That's not, if the Pope's focus is on global warming and helping migrants instead of protecting children, well, again, it's been a lot of years since I was a Christian, and a lot, even more years since I was a pastor, but I think there's something in the New Testament. Isn't there some quote by some guy in the New Testament about harming little children or allowing them to be harmed? I'm pretty sure that's there. And I'm pretty sure the Pope knows that because, theoretically anyway, he's an expert in his theology and he would know that. And so would this cardinal who says there's more important things on the agenda. There's more important things to do rather than get sucked down the rabbit hole of child abuse. We're not going to deal with that. We've got enough money, I guess, to pay off anybody that's involved with that. We've got enough, you know, pull around the rest of the world. I mean, I guess if you're the Catholic Church, you kind of look at it and go, well, okay, so it's America. Who cares? Catholics, Roman Catholics are a relative. I mean, I realize there's a lot of them, but as a religious majority goes, they've never been a religious majority in the United States. The only thing they're really worth to us is money. If they were to go away, well, so what? Never happened, you say? You might want to go review your history of churches in America and why there are certain American denominations who split away from their international denominations because they didn't want to be taken advantage of like that. It's happened in the past and it will happen again in the future. And I can see where the California, or not California, the Catholic Church in the United States could face such a, you think, for God's sake, that's why there's an Anglican church. The Anglican church is the English version of the Catholic church. Remember, you won't give me a divorce? Fine, I'll form my own church. And now the Archbishop of Canterbury is Christ's vicar on earth, selected by, you know, God himself and the Holy Spirit and casting lots and that sort of thing. And on we go and out it turns. I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. I wish I did. I find it interesting that people outside the church seemingly are more interested than, or at least expressing more interest in it than people inside the church. The people inside the church have got to be, this has got to be hard for them. It really does. And I can't even really imagine what they're going through is a crisis of faith. I guess I should sit down and talk to my brother. My brother is converted to Catholics. Converted to Catholicism some years ago. I guess I should sit down with him, but he's been on a vacation trip too across the country, so we haven't had much of a chance to talk. But, you know, he may have some different input on that, and he may think some things differently. I don't know. I do know that if you have a church, you have a child abuse problem. I don't really care what denomination you're in. I don't really care what church you go to. I don't care. You have a child abuse problem because that's where it's going to happen. Of all the institutions in the United States today, the church is the most vulnerable. Regardless of denomination, regardless of faith, regardless of practice, the church is the most vulnerable. But because the church, well, it has to be. The first rule of security is the only people that can hurt you are people you trust. And in the church, you have to trust people. And if you don't trust people, you don't really have a church, do you? Schools are locked down defense against this. Boys and girls clubs are locked down defensive against this. The YMCA, I mean, it's because those organizations recognize the danger. The church, however, for some reason, just doesn't seem to want to do it. Anyway, let's get off of that. And oh man, we're out of time. Doggone it. So I had this. That's what happens when you have an idea of what you want to talk about and you get derailed slightly and you run out of time. You don't have time to get on to the other subject. Oh well. So coming up the rest of the week, we do have Constitution Thursday tomorrow. I got a great case for tomorrow. And it kind of tied in with the other story I was going to talk about. The other story I was going to talk about today was this I-940? Yeah, I-940 in Washington State here, which is this idea to reduce violence in our communities by requiring law enforcement to receive violence de-escalation, mental health, and first aid training, and provide first aid and change standards for the use of deadly force, adding a good faith standard and an independent investigation. The idea here is that we're going to hold police officers more accountable when somebody gets shot and make it easier to prosecute them on a good faith standard. And while I understand the idea here, while I understand the theory here, the problem is, well, you're essentially changing the ROE, the rules of engagement for police. Now, I certainly have my beliefs about policing in the United States of America. I don't think police officers are bad, but I think that policing, particularly when used by smaller communities, the lower municipalities, we've got a fundamental problem with how that is used and how that's done. The police force has essentially become the pointy end of the stick of local government. And I've said this before. When people argue with me, well, Dave, you don't need a gun to fight the army. It's not the army I'm worried about. I don't read stories in the newspaper about the army breaking down people's doors, violating their civil rights. I do, on the other hand, read every day stories about police departments around the country doing that, and I have some questions about why that happens. So the idea of having more training is not necessarily a bad idea to me, but this idea of good faith standards and changing the ROE for the use of deadly force is problematic. It's not going to work. And the first time that a police officer is convicted, you're going to have police officers quitting left and right. Then what are you going to do? And the first time a police officer is vindicated by one of these independent investigations, you're going to have riots in the street. Anyway, point being that I don't have a problem with police training. I do have a problem with local governments who use police as the pointy end of their stick, and that's kind of what Constitution Thursday is going to be about tomorrow, as we talk about one community that decided that, well, we can just do whatever the hell we want. Constitution. Who needs that? So that'll be coming up tomorrow on the show, as we'll be here at 10 o'clock tomorrow for Constitution Thursday. I got to get running. Rest of the day is ahead of me, and we got a pretty big day ahead. We got Ben's back to school this afternoon, so not back to school, but his back to school meeting with his teachers and all that. So we'll be off to go doing that and hopefully have a little bit of fun along the way. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I am Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You can find all the other great shows that we have for you, including Tim Price, who's coming up next on the Podcast 99 Radio side of things. The Yale Evangelist, Jay's Politics Blog, podcast, all that stuff at podcast99.org. See you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.
Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.